I want to talk to you today about seven convincing miracles of Jesus. That's an interesting approach to this lesson. How many miracles would you have to see to be absolutely, totally convinced that Jesus was the Son of God? That's an interesting concept and an interesting thing that is involved in this, and that is, how many miracles would you have to see? You stop and you think about that kind of thing. Well, if I could just see all 31 of the miracles. I think it is remarkable that when you get after the resurrection of Jesus, when you arrive at that time in the life of Jesus, when you arrive there at the life of Jesus after his resurrection, he said you didn't have to see any. If you'll stop and think about this, he rebuked his disciples because he did not believe the words of the women that said he's been raised from the dead. Once you've seen the evidence and there are eyewitnesses of it, you have a responsibility to obey it. And so even after his resurrection, he rebuked those disciples, he rebuked the apostles because they would not accept the testimony of eyewitnesses. So you don't have to see a miracle. It's obvious you don't have to see a miracle if you'll stop and think about it. Whenever you have that story of the rich man and Lazarus. And Lazarus on the other side knew he had brothers back on this earth who had not died, and he wanted Abraham wanted heaven to perform a miracle and send Lazarus back that he could warn them of these things. It is interesting of the fact that the response given from heaven, from Abraham, the mouthpiece, that says they have the old Bible, they have the Old Testament, they have the law and the prophet, Moses and the prophets, and if they would not listen to the Bible, they would not believe it if they saw a miracle. Now in our mind we think anybody would have to be convinced. Wait a minute. How many people saw the 31 miracles of Jesus? And how many of them believed that he was the Son of God? So there is that element there. Now, why do we have miracles? So that we can know that he is the Son of God. And so I want us in this lesson today to look at seven miracles that if you'll look at them, you could never face God on the day of judgment after you hear this lesson this morning and saying, there was just not enough evidence that I ought to believe the Bible and do what it says. Let's look at the text of this lesson and look at the setting of verse 20, verse 30 and verse 31. But to do that, you've got to recognize that the book of John already has used the word believed 15 times before you get to this section. The book of John, over and over, 15 different times, talks about people believing in Jesus, believing in Jesus, believing in Jesus. And Thomas said, you know, unless I can put my fingers into the handprints and where the nail prints are in his hand, or put my hand in the side where that spear has been, I will not believe. He never had to do it. When he saw Jesus, he said, my Lord and my God. And Jesus said to him, blessed are you, that's in verse 29, because you have believed and you have seen. But listen, here's us. Blessed are those who, having not seen, still believe. Isn't that amazing? That's us. We've not seen the resurrected Jesus. We've not had the opportunity to put our fingers into the nail prints or a hand into his side. And yet Jesus said, Thomas, you're blessed because you've seen, but blessed are those who, having never seen a miracle, believe. And then the amazing statement, we separate verse 30 and verse 31 from the events when Thomas has just believed. John says, and many other miracles. Not just the nail prints in my hand, not just the hole in my side, many other miracles did Jesus in the presence of his disciples, which are not written in this book. But these are written that you might believe, and that believing, you might have life through his name. Wait a minute. How many miracles are there in the book of John? John says, I've written enough so that if you know, and we say the number is 7 because we do not include the resurrection, because only a limited number saw the resurrected Jesus. How many miracles are there? There are 7 miracles in the book of John. That's what I want us to talk about, but in a different way. I want you to forget about living here in the 21st century. I want you to go back and relive with me in the next several minutes, relive with me the miracles, these 7 miracles that are here. Now, the way I want to do that, I want you to become a resident of the first century. That's where I want you to be. I want you to go with me to John chapter 2. I want you to imagine you're there in Cana of Galilee. I want you to imagine that you're there at that wedding feast that is there. I want you to imagine that you are an eyewitness of this first miracle. Now, here's the lesson. We'll look at the first miracle, and then we'll look at all 7 miracles, asking you to be an eyewitness. You're there. What's your responsibility? Well, it's just a wedding. It's your job. You know, you've got a friend that is hosting the wedding. There is the bridegroom. There are those that are involved that are there that are part of this. And you're just trying to help out. Or he may have hired you to be that individual that is there. And you are that individual to whom Jesus says, get some water and put it in these pots. You have no interest. You don't even know who Jesus is. You've never met him. You know nothing at all about him. And yet, Jesus says in John chapter 2 to some individual, and in your imagination, let that be you, fill these pots with water. You know how many gallons of water you've got to transport? You've got to understand there are at least 150 gallons of water. Now, what does water weigh? 10 pounds a gallon? You've got to bring, 1,400 pounds of water. I don't know if you've carried a 5-gallon bucket full of paint or water and everything. You know how heavy that 5 gallons of water is? Imagine. You do that and you start filling up the first one. There may have been others, but let's just let it be you. And you've made trip after trip. Wherever that fresh water is, you're going and getting, and you're bringing that water back. You are dead tired and you're doing it because this man has told you to do it. And his mother said, whatever he tells you to do, you do it. Your back is aching. You finally get their 6 stone water pots that are there, and you finally fill it up, and you go, now, he said, take some out. What? I just put it in there. You want me to take it out? And you take it out, and when you take it out, somebody saw this. Somebody experienced this. And in your imagination, I want it to be you. You experienced seeing that water that you put in those water pots turn into wine, but not just wine, the very best wine, so much better than any of the wine that had previously been drunk in that feast. I want to ask you, who is this man? What impact does it have in your life because you have been an eyewitness of water being turned into wine? You find his name, Jesus of Nazareth. You may be like those who were prejudiced against Nazareth. So here's this individual from a city that does not have the best reputation, and you have eyewitness, you have backed witness, carrying all of that water. Your body is tired from having done all of this, and you have seen that water turn into wine. I ask you, who is this man Jesus? You may not know for sure, but in that same chapter, in chapter 4, Jesus comes back to the place where he did his first miracle, and there is this second miracle there when he cures the nobleman's son. I want you to think about that. He cures the nobleman's son. You know that event? Jesus has come back to there. You're still living in that area. Oh, this man Jesus is back up here in Canaan. And so we go so hanging around Jesus, and all and behold, here's this man of nobility. He's an individual that is influential. He may be a highly respected individual. The word noble man indicates that. And he comes to Jesus and he says, "My son is dying." You may not know it, but you're about to see that second miracle. You hear Jesus as he says, "Go back home. Your son is," present tense, "is healed." You don't believe it? Is it possible? And so you follow this individual, those 26 miles back. It takes you a day to get over back to Capernaum where this nobleman is from. And as you approach the house of the nobleman, the household servants rush out and they say, "Your son is okay. He was dying." And all of a sudden, when did it happen? And they said, "Yesterday afternoon at 1 p.m. And you know that's exactly when Jesus said, "Your son is healed." Who is this man Jesus? You see, that's the question we face. Coming back to the 21st century, let me ask you something. If you're convinced that Jesus is the Son of God, that's the motivation you have for obeying the gospel. Why should I give my life to Jesus? If you're convinced that Jesus is the Son of God, the answer, why should I live by the moral standards that he's given? If you're convinced that Jesus is the Son of God, why should I not live a faithful life? What if you had seen the water turn to wine? And what if you had witnessed the words of Jesus that said, "Your son is well"? And at that very instant, just like that, just like the water was turned into wine, just like that, this nobleman's son is healed. Let's leave Galilee. Let's go down to the city of Jerusalem. John chapter 5. There's a pool in Jerusalem. There were many pools that were there. The people had to have water. Evidently, they went to that water often for various reasons. They had to just survive. And so there was a particular pool called Bethesda. It had five columns, not just some little small, swimming pool type size pool. Five massive columns. That was the mindset among the Jews, that an angel would come and would stir the water. all of a sudden there'd be some commotion in that water, and they believed that the first person who got in the water would be healed. You've left Canaan. You've left Capernaum. And now you're in Jerusalem. It just happens that that crippled man that is beside the pool is a lifelong friend of yours. He's crippled. You've carried him to the water, and then you, because of other responsibility, have had to leave. And he's lying there hoping that some way that angel will stir the water and he'll be able to be the first one in that pool of water. And you've come back, and as you come back, there is your friend talking to Jesus. And Jesus says to a man who has never walked, Jesus says to him, take up your bed and walk. Is it possible? Is it possible that he who can turn water into wine just like that, he who is able to cure the nobleman's son, is it possible he could give this man mobility just like that? And lo and behold, right before your eyes, you see him as he rolls up whatever blanket he has and he begins to carry it away. Who is this man that's come into your life? He's turned water into wine instantly. He's cured the nobleman's son instantly. And now he's raised the crippled man instantly. Let some time pass. Now you're back up in Galilee and you're trying to follow Jesus around. You're not the only ones. Multitudes of hundreds. Multitudes of thousands, perhaps massive numbers, and maybe perhaps reaching the level of being 10,000 people are following Jesus, and you're one of them. He's not on the western side of the Sea of Galilee. He's over on the eastern side of the Sea of Galilee. He's gone over there in the boat, but the multitude, they're moved over there too. And Jesus goes up into the mountain, and he sees the multitude of thousands coming to him. You arrive there just as Jesus is finishing his conversation to the disciples whenever he said, we need to feed these people. And one of the disciples had said, you know, if we had 200 days' wages, we'd only be able to give a morsel of it to everyone that's here. Andrew says, the only food I know that's here is a young boy that has 5 loaves and 2 fishes. Whenever they sit down at Jesus' instruction, you sit there and with your own eyes, you see him as he breaks the fish. You see, and as he takes these small loaves of bread and parts them, and the more he breaks, the more there is, and that little container that contained 5 loaves and 2 fishes, however that young man carried them, with your own eyes, you saw the fish and the bread multiplied enough, listen to this, so that the 5,000 men, not counting the women and children, 5,000 men eat as much as they want. Every single one of them is satisfied. And lo and behold, they take up 12 baskets full. And you see it. Who is this man, Jesus? But that's not all. He who can instantly turn water into wine, he who can instantly cure the nobleman's son, he who can instantly tell the crippled man, take up your bed and walk, he who can instantly multiply the loaves and the fishes. is a miracle connected with this, though this is one you'll have to trust the apostles to tell us about. When that miracle is finished, the people are astounded at Jesus. They said, "Let's make him king." He doesn't want to be an earthly king. He could have been made an earthly king and could have sat on the throne of David there in John chapter 6. But verse 15 of John chapter 6 says that whenever he perceived what was about to happen, he went away. The people, when the next day comes, Jesus is not there. He's not in the boat. You saw the disciples get in whatever boats they had brought over there. Jesus is not there. And then the word comes, he's back over on the west bank. And so the multitudes travel in mass to go over to see where he is. And when they arrived, they said, "How did you get here?" You know what the eyewitnesses said? You remember that storm last night, that amazing storm last night, and do you remember how instantly, just like that, it stopped? Now you've eyewitnessed to that. And those disciples said, "We were about to sink in that boat, and we saw Jesus coming, walking on the water." And when he gets in the boat, the storm stops. Something you may not notice unless you're reading every word carefully. They were in the midst of the sea, but the minute Jesus gets in that boat is on the other shore. Who is this man Jesus? Who is this man Jesus? Let's go back to Jerusalem. This time not to Bethesda, but to the pool of Siloam. You're following Jesus. You are so intrigued because you have seen him do something that no man can do. You are more and more becoming convinced to the very depths of your soul that he really is Emmanuel, God in a human body. No man can turn water into wine. No man can cure the nobleman's son. No man can tell the crippled man to take up his bed and walk. No man can feed the multitudes. No man can still the tempest. And you see Jesus doing the most strangest thing he's ever done. He spits on the ground because there's a blind man, and he takes that spittle and that clay, dirt that is there, and rubs it on his eyes. And he says, "Go wash in the pool of Siloam." What's the blind man going to do? Where's the pool of Siloam, and how do I get there? You say to the blind man, "I will take you." And you lead that blind man to the pool of Siloam, and you see him as he goes and he washes that clay and spittle off of his eyes. And what words could he say other than that which our imagination supply? "I can see." He'd been blind all of his... Was he born blind? That's the question in the early part of John chapter 9. Was he born blind? The guy had never seen, but he'd studied his Bible, because in this very chapter he said to those religious leaders, "We don't believe in Jesus." And he said, "How could you not know who he is? In the history of mankind on this earth, not one person has ever, in the thousands and thousands of years, not one person has ever had his sight restored. How is it that you cannot know?" And you hear that man when he says those words. How is it that you cannot know who Jesus is? and then tragedy of tragedies. John chapter 11. Your friend Lazarus dies. He's been sick at least for 4 days, or for some time. He's been dead for 4 days by the time Jesus gets there. But you're there with these two sisters and their brother, and he's dying. Somebody carried the body of Lazarus and laid it in that tomb. Somebody, either by themselves or with help from the others, somebody rolled that stone to close that grave. Can you imagine how sickening the thud of that rock as it rolled down whatever incline was there? And when it hit, that sickening sound of death. And Jesus comes. He goes to the grave. And you see something about Jesus that you may have never seen. You've seen his power. But now you see his loving compassion. That's exactly what you would expect to see when God is in a fleshly body. Tears flowing down his cheeks. Jesus wept. That remarkable? And then he says, "Roll back the stone." And there are those, perhaps you included, who rolls back that stone. And they look in that grave. Somebody said, "Look!" And with your own eyes, you see that body still bound hand and foot in grave clothes. You see that body as it comes out of that grave. And you hear Jesus as he says, "Loose him and let him go." Who is this Jesus? He's God in the flesh. He's the Messiah. And he says, "Come to me." What does that mean, "come to me"? How do I come to him? All of the verses that we have here are from John, or from the writings of John. You and I need to see that we come to Jesus because we have looked at the evidence and we believe it and we trust it. John 8:24. If you don't believe that, you will die in your sins. Have you trusted Jesus? Well, I believe in him. No, that's not the question. Have you made that change in your inner life? The Bible word for that change is repentance. Have you repented? Have you made that change in your allegiance, and you say, and you literally mean it from the depths of your soul, "It's not what I want to do on this earth, what my flesh wants to do. It's what my spirit wants to do." There's that time when your flesh wants to live an ungodly life and live away from God. And there is that realization that your spirit is going to change your flesh. And the spirit is willing, but the flesh is weak. And I change my allegiance and I say, as Jesus said in Gethsemane, "Not my will, but your will be done." Folks, that's what repentance is. And Jesus says, "Come and follow me." prior to this time, you've been following yourself and doing exactly what you wanted to do. Follow Jesus. John chapter 12 and verse 42 describes some people that believed on him, but because of those around them, they would not confess him, lest they be put out of the synagogue. Are you ashamed of your faith? You want to be like these individuals who say, I believe in him and I trust in him some, at least a part of me trusts him, but there's still this pressure in the world and I'm still going to do what I want to do. Lest I be cast out of the synagogue. Lest I have to give up friends. Lest I have to give up doing things in my life. I'm just going to believe in him, and then that's as far as I'm going to take it. In another place, Jesus said, if you confess me before men, I'll confess you before the Father. This very day, you could confess your faith in Jesus. And this very day, you can fulfill John 3:5 that says, you've heard in this lesson the words of the Spirit. That's not Dan's sermon. This is the words given by the Holy Spirit of God. 7 miracles that we've lived together. The Spirit of God has given you the evidence. You must be born again because God's Spirit has taught you. But you must be born of water and of the Spirit, and that water is baptism. And except you're born of water and the Spirit, you will not enter the kingdom. You want to shut the doors of heaven? Then refuse to be born of water and the Spirit. Well, why should I do that? Because he's the Messiah. And because when I do these things, he makes me a part of his flock. He's now my shepherd. I hear his voice and I follow the voice of my shepherd, and that flock is the church. And then an admonition to each of us. Those of us who've already done these things, let me encourage you to hear these other words of Jesus. Don't you dare let up. Don't you turn back to the world. Be faithful until the day that you die, and I will give you the crown of life. Those are the words of God in the flesh. Those are the words of Emmanuel. And he cannot lie. I will give you the crown of life. What about you? Are the changes that you need to make right now because you are convinced that Jesus is the Messiah? There's the evidence. There's no excuse. And someday you will face God having lived together these very miracles in this last 30 or 40 minutes. And you need to deal with it. If you are away from God, will you not come and make whatever is wrong in your life right in the sight of God? Come right now as together we stand and sing. Will you come?